Welcome to Quinn's Empowerment Hour on the BBS Radio Network, hosted by Quinn Lay Erickson, psychotherapist, life coach, and inspirational speaker. Quinn's experience as a blind woman, a boat person from Vietnam, and a refugee has driven her to realize her dream to help you to become the best that you can be. So join Quinn every other Saturday, 9 p.m. Pacific Time, for an hour of insight and inspiration for your heart, your spirit, and your soul. Good evening, this is Quinn's Empowerment Hour with Quinn Lay Erickson. Thank you for joining me tonight. Tonight we'll talk about a very interesting topic. We'll talk about how can we change our brain so to cope with things like anxiety, worries, negative thoughts, how we can change our brain so that we can increase our self-esteem and productivity. How can we deal with stress by changing our brain? And so tonight, I'm very pleased to introduce to you a special guest on the show, Mark Wallman. So here is a bit about Mark Wallman.
Mark Wallman has authored 14 books, including the national bestseller, How God Changes Your Brain, which Oprah selected as one of the 9 must-read books for 2012. Considered one of the world's leading experts on consciousness, communication, spirituality, and the brain, Mark is on the executive MBA faculty at Loyola Marymount University. He also teaches at Holmes Institute. His research has been published in journals throughout the world, and his work has been featured in Time Magazine, The Washington Post, The New York Times, Forbes, Entrepreneur, and Oprah Magazine. He has appeared on hundreds of radio and television programs, including PBS and NPR, and his TED Talk has been viewed by more than 100,000 people. He received the Distinguished Speaker Award from the Mind Science Foundation. His new book, co-authored with Andy Newberg, is called How Enlightenment Changes Your Brain, and his brain training program, NeuroWisdom 101, will show you how to get there and achieve lifelong satisfaction. NeuroWisdom is used in schools, health centers, and businesses throughout the world. His website is markrobertwaldman.com, and Waldman is spelled W-A-L-D-M-A-N. Or you can visit his other website, neurowisdom101.com. Now here is Mark Wallman.
And so, Mark, can you tell us what is a neurowisdom?
Neurowisdom is a term that I coined because we have many processes in the brain that have its own intuitive awareness, and we can learn how to access some of these forms of intuition, deeper senses of awareness that are more reliable than the everyday logic and reason that we use when we basically think with our frontal lobes, the area right above your eyes. And it's almost better than any book that you read. So as the brain develops, one of the last areas to come online is an area called the insula and the cingulate cortex, or the anterior cingulate in specific. And this is part of the social brain. This is where we begin to have empathy and compassion and understanding, not just for ourselves, but for other people as well. And within these structures, there's a very unusual neuron, and they're called spindle neurons or von Economo neurons, and they're involved with what's called fast intuitive reasoning. This is the creative problem-solving parts of your brain. So neurowisdom is about how we use contemporary brain science to make improvements in all types and aspects of our life. So I created a program called NeuroWisdom 101 that teaches you how to become more mindful, how to change a normally pessimistic mindset into an optimistic mindset, how to lower stress and tension in 60 seconds or less, how to boost performance and work productivity, simply, for example, by picking a word that has deep value to you and repeating it. That can turn on 1,200 stress-reducing genes, and you'll find that the next hour of work that you do is more productive.
How is it possible to change the function of our brain in 60 seconds? And that's the big part of your neural wisdom 101,
yes.
Right?
One of the principles in the brain is known as neuroplasticity. And all that basically means is from the moment we are born, many parts of the brain are literally sending out different types of connections to other parts of the brain. Even a single neuron can have as many as 1,000 axons at the tip, and they can stretch out from one end of your brain to the other to connect with other structures. And of course, different neurons will turn on and off with different types of stimulus that come in. For me, one of the most amazing things about the human brain is that when we are thinking about anything, we activate neurons in the front part of our frontal lobe, right above our eyes. And it means that whatever thought we are having, positive or negative, will actually trigger activity in other parts of the brain, turning on and off neurons, and sometimes over a period of time, actually changing its structure.
So what you're saying is at different, at each moment when we think about something, different areas of our brain are being activated.
Yes. Let me give you an example, and all of the listeners an example as well. I want you to recall a painful memory from the past. Think about a time when somebody hurt you, somebody insulted you, somebody really offended you and made you feel bad for days or weeks or even months. I'm going to ring a bell and just ask you for about 10 seconds to recall a negative memory and notice how it makes you feel. So that sense of disappointment, that sense of pain, that sense of sadness that comes up means that you have pulled a memory from one part of your brain and you've brought that information up into your frontal lobe. You're now consciously thinking about it. And as you consciously think about it, stimulation is going all the way down into the deeper parts of your brain to a structure called the amygdala. And this is stimulating a fear or a sadness reaction. Now I want you to do the reverse. I want you to close your eyes, and I want you to make this experience even stronger because negative emotions, like the one I just brought up for you, they're more sticky in the brain. They'll tend to build stronger neural circuits, whereas the brain isn't really designed to remember positive emotions and feelings very well. So this time, I want you, when I ring the bell, to yawn a few times and stretch and just make yourself as deeply relaxed as possible, because it's going to be easier to recall this pleasant memory. Listen to the bell. Yawn right along with me. It's the fastest way to eliminate mental stress. Yawn again. Slowly stretch and twist and turn. And the slower you turn and stretch and twist, the more your brain can feel where the tension is, and it'll send a relaxation signal to those muscles. And now think about somebody you deeply love or an event that brought you deep satisfaction. Visualize that person's face, visualize the event and the location that you were at, and imagine and feel that love towards that person. Feel that excitement, that joy from that event. Repeat it in your mind. Saturate yourself in it. Immerse yourself in that incredible, pleasant memory as if it's happening for the very first time. And here's what I call a neurowisdom tip. Thanks to the research of Barbara Fredrickson and other leaders in the positive psychology field, they discovered what's called a positivity ratio. And if throughout the day you have less than three positive thoughts and feelings for every negative thought and feeling that you have, we can predict with a fair amount of accuracy that your personal relationship may be heading towards divorce. And if you bring that type of negativity into your business relationships, that can bring an entire company towards bankruptcy. But if you push that positivity ratio arbitrarily, simply by recalling pleasant memories, by interrupting every negative thought or feeling with four or five or six positive thoughts or feelings, you can actually create a deeper relationship with those you love, and the companies become more successful. That's pretty amazing.
Why our brain is so programmed to be negative?
Because it's a survival-oriented mechanism. Something that's just pleasurable, like what you ate yesterday, was good for the moment. But something that was painful from yesterday, like you accidentally bumping your toe into a piece of furniture in the middle of the room, then you remember that. You'll think about that piece of furniture every time you get close to it. But human brains are different. We have an overly imaginative frontal lobe. So our imagination is so rich that we can actually trigger in other parts of the brain a sense that the fantasy that we're having is real, even though it's not. And so many people end up becoming anxious or depressed, not for any external reason, but simply because they got into the habit of worrying about something all the time. They may have imitated their parents' worry structure. They may not have been taught how to think positively, how to become an optimist. And we now know that you can train your mind and change your brain to begin to stimulate the circuits that generate optimism, confidence, and you can actually turn off parts of your brain that tend to generate worries and fears and doubts.
Earlier, you talked about stimulating the 1,200 stress-reducing genes with one word. Can you walk us through that process?
Yes. Now, I can tell you what the most dangerous word in the world is, which is no. If I put you in a brain scan machine and I flash that word for one half of a second, it will release a ton of stress neurochemicals. But I can't tell you what the most positive word in your life is, but I can show you how to get there. So again, I need everyone to listen to this bell. The bell is kind of an entrainment device. So the more deeply you listen to this bell, the more it pulls you into the present moment. So I'm going to ring this bell again. And as the sound of the bell fades away, keep listening. You'll have to listen harder and harder and harder. And then when you can't hear anything, you'll start becoming aware of sounds in the room or maybe the sound of your own breathing. This is full concentration, and this simple exercise, by the way, is a great way to even eliminate symptoms of ADD. This is how you train yourself to concentrate, just by listening to the sound of a bell once an hour. So you can download a mindfulness bell or a mindfulness clock onto your computer and set it to go off a couple of times while you're working. And then when you hear the bell, this is all you do. You hear the bell, do a yawn and a stretch to relax. And then listen very deeply to the sound of the bell as it fades away. Listen even harder. Immerse yourself in all of the sounds of the room that you probably didn't notice before. Now bring your attention to the sound of your own breathing and just notice how it sounds and how it feels. Breathing in, breathing out. You can even put one hand on your chest, the other hand on your belly, and immerse yourself in the rising and falling of your chest and belly. Just by following your breath, you're learning how to take control over all kinds of processes deep inside of your brain that regulates your emotions. But I want you to notice when you yawn, when you stretch, when you listen to the sound of the bell, when you focus on your breathing, you're practicing a form of mindfulness. It pulls you into the present moment. And all of you right now will notice that you're not having the slightest bit of worry, doubt, anxiety, or depression. When those anxious feelings come back up again, when you start to worry and you start to feel burdened, this is your mind producing thoughts that's stimulating fear centers in your brain. Right now, you're feeling none of that. Come back to the present moment. And I'm going to ask you a question. And I want you to listen not to your logic and reason, but to your intuition. And pay attention to the first word that comes into your mind when you hear this question. What is your deepest, innermost value? See what word comes to mind. Write it down on a piece of paper. And Gwen, tell me what word came to your mind.
Calmness.
And the word that came to my mind was peace. And for many other people, it could be integrity, God, compassion, love. One person came up with the word grandmother because her grandmother represented certain values and principles. This is the word that if you keep repeating it to yourself over and over and over again, it will turn on those 1200 stress-reducing genes. So try it right now. Take the word that you came up with and repeat it aloud. Peace, peace, peace. Calm, calm, calm. And now the word that you came up with.
Calmness, calmness, calmness.
Notice how your mind and your body begins to take on the quality of that word. And sometimes when you're working and you have that mindfulness bell go off once an hour and you're really engaged in doing a really difficult project or something like that, or you're preparing for an important talk or speech, and you hear that bell, that reminder to just take a yawn and a stretch, ask yourself, what is the deepest, most valuable word that comes to mind that will help you with the next hour? So right now, if I was to focus on what word would be my best value for conducting this interview with you, and I focus on it, I get a series of words that come to my mind. Compassion, focus, attentiveness. And so if I repeat that to myself, I become more focused, more attentive, keeping that sense of warmth for you and for the listeners on this call. You can try that as well. Imagine that you have to go into a difficult work situation right now. You hear the bell, you relax, you yawn, you stretch. What word, I like to call it a power word, would you like to use?
Compassion.
And so if you're going to deal with a difficult person, you can use this also. You can ask yourself, what is my deepest relationship value? And for one person, it might be to be deeply listened to. And if you take two people who are about to have a conflict with each other and ask each other, what's your deepest value? You can agree to have whatever kind of fight you want as you honor those two words, which is oftentimes deeply listened to with compassion and with respect. Now, go ahead and fight. You can't fight if you are deeply grounded in your innermost values. And that's that special word. And at night, if you wake up and you're having trouble going back to sleep, you can find a word that brings you that sense of relaxation. I even use the word sleep, 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 sleep. And I'm willing to bet that for most of you, you'll find yourself back to sleep within 3 or 4 minutes.
What is the role of pleasure in our brain?
Pleasure is the main force that keeps us alive and interested and motivated in life. It starts from the moment we wake up. Our brain looks around for anything that it needs or desires. Maybe it's hungry, in which case it looks for something pleasurable to eat. Maybe it says, oh, I'm bored. What would be fun to do? And so you begin to think about different activities from the past that brought you pleasure. And this is what stimulates the motivational centers in your brain. It's centered in a structure called the nucleus accumbens. And whenever you focus on something that's interesting, new, different, curious, and pleasurable, dopamine gets released from that lower part in your brain. That's your pleasure neurochemical. And it rushes into your frontal lobes. It makes you more conscious, more aware. And then your awareness says, all right, how can I get that object that I desire? It's such a powerful force that if it gets overly stimulated, you'll desire that object so much that it becomes an addiction, a compulsion. So people who are addicted to anything, whether it be an activity or a drug, they're having too much dopamine being released. And then you can learn how to train your brain through these neural wisdom exercises on how to turn off that overexcitement. You can focus in on peace. You can learn how to use your decision-making skills in your frontal lobe to make wiser decisions. You can learn how to turn off the negative, pessimistic voices that are constantly being generated in one part of your brain and replace them with wise, optimistic decision-making voices that are being generated in another part of your brain. And then, when you're not sure about which act to take, that's where, again, you listen to the bell, you yawn, you stretch, and you ask that voice of inner wisdom, your intuition, what advice does it give you? And it will always give you sage advice. It may not be the best advice, and it's sometimes wrong. But if you listen to it and combine it with your logic and reason and all of your knowledge, that's the best way to become highly productive.
Going back to that point, you know, if somebody has been used to getting pleasure in self-destructive ways, such as using drugs or sex or something like that, you know, just not constructive, how can they retrain their brain to get pleasure in other healthier activities?
We have to add a new circuit into the brain chemistry. We all know as children, we want immediate gratification. We want our cookie, we want our marshmallow now. We don't want to have to wait for it. We don't want to work for it. And so we have to learn what's called delayed gratification. And a very famous set of experiments done at Stanford University 30 years ago. The researcher would walk into a room where there was a young child, 5 years old. And he would put one marshmallow or a pretzel or a cookie on a plate, and he would give the child the following instruction. You're welcome to eat that marshmallow or that cookie or that pretzel right now. I'm going to leave the room for 15 minutes. And when I come back in, if you haven't eaten that marshmallow, I'm going to give you a second treat or another present or another reward. And it's very funny to watch the films of these kids. Some kids will sit there, their hand will reach out to try to grab for that marshmallow, and they'll pull their hand back. Some kids will pick it up, they'll put it into their mouth, and then they'll put it back down on the plate. And some kids can't wait at all, and they eat it. Here's the interesting thing. They've been following those kids 10, 20, 30, 40 years after the experiment. They found out that the kids who were able to delay the immediate pleasure, to a delay that gratification, those were the ones who got higher grades in school, got better jobs when they went out into the job market, and then 20 to 30 years later, those were the people who had the best impulse control, particularly when it came around to eating, but they also had the highest degree of life satisfaction. So what we learn from these kinds of studies, and we can watch what happens in the brain, we learn how to use our optimistic fantasies about having a positive future, and we impose that on the biological greediness that we are all born with. And we learn how to seek long-term desires for bigger rewards. And the only thing I've learned in this research and what we teach to all of our executive MBA students is that when you're working hard towards a big goal, your brain still needs constant, immediate, little, tiny, pleasurable rewards. Why? Because any form of pleasure releases dopamine, and dopamine is also the chemical that gives you the energy to work harder. So we have you load the mindfulness clock onto the computer. We suggest that you have it ring three times during the hour. During the first ring and the second ring, just take 10 seconds to yawn. That gets rid of neurological stress. Or do a slow stretch, very slow stretch. That gets rid of physiological stress. Then you throw yourself back into work. And then at the end of the hour, when you hear that bell again, or in most of the mindfulness clocks that we have, you'll hear a deeper bell like this. Commit yourself to spending at least 60 seconds to do anything that you find pleasurable. That could be a meditation. That could be slowly washing your face mindfully and just feeling all the wonderful, pleasurable, cold or warm water on your hands and face. Or run around the block if running turns you on. Get that runner's high. Do something different that gives you an incredible amount of pleasure. In that 1 minute of time that you spend, and you can spend 3 minutes if you want, your brain is refreshing itself. When you're working hard, when you're concentrating, only a little tiny area above your eyes are lit up as you concentrate. And that's the part of your brain that gets tired the quickest. It needs to take a relaxation break. And when it does that, when you're doing these pleasurable activities, or if you simply sit back in your chair and do literally conscious daydreaming and just let your mind wander, this is where your brain refreshes it yourself. You see all kinds of new neurological activity take place throughout the brain. And it's actually how what your brain is doing is solving difficult problems throughout the day. 60 seconds of that, you'll be refreshed. The next hour of work will be better than the last hour of work. That's how you can train your brain through neurowisdom to perform better, to feel more optimistic, to have more confidence, to build self-esteem. And so what we had to do, since I work with executive MBA students, which means all of these people, they're running multi-million dollar companies. They're managers and CEOs. And they only have time to be in class on Saturday, which means they're in class from 8 o'clock in the morning to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And then they have a ton of homework to do on top of it. They're exhausted. So I'm brought in specifically to teach them how to keep doing these stress reduction and relaxation and focusing exercises throughout the day. And our students have found, and our research has shown, and we've documented it in peer-reviewed journals, that this is some of the most effective ways to improve learning and to enhance virtually every aspect of your life. But remember, busy people will only give you 60 seconds of their time to do anything. So NeuroWisdom 101 has 58 different simple exercises that you take a few minutes to learn. They're experiential exercises. The audio program guides you through each one of these steps, many of the ones that I've described to you so far, but in more detail. You learn how to create a crap board. For example, you take all of your worries and fears and doubts and weaknesses, and you write them down on a piece of paper. You get all your crap in your life onto that piece of paper. Then you gaze at that piece of paper as you listen to that sound of the bell. You yawn and stretch, and sometimes we even have you stroke the palms of your hands and your forearms, because that actually turns on self-esteem and self-confidence circuits in your brain. Let me guide you all through that. Put all of your fingertips against each other and start to move very slow circles. Begin to explore your fingertips as if you have never experienced them before. That's what mindfulness does. Mindfulness teaches you how to become aware of what's happening in the present moment. Now, very slowly, begin to run your fingers down the sides of your other fingers, just noticing how different parts of your fingers feel different. And just use your imagination, like my hands are just running back and forth for each other, and you can explore the palms of your hands. You can take your right hand and explore your left forearm. Then you can take your left hand and explore the top of your head if you want. Notice that you can explore any part of your body with your fingertips. Again, it brings you into the present moment. It very deeply relaxes you, because what we've learned, basically what I'm teaching you, is what your dog and cat does every morning. The moment they wake up, what do? They yawn, they stretch, and they'll preen themselves. These are self-nurturing, self-comforting forms of waking you up, bringing you in the present moment so you function better during your daily lifestyle. Now, we use some of this as well. For example, I do what's called neurocoaching. So I have clients throughout the world. We work through Skype. And with neurocoaching, we can deal with most issues in one or two sessions. And this even includes issues from previous and past traumas and abuse. And so you have to be in a very deeply relaxed state. And many times it helps to stroke your hands and arms as you recall a genuine traumatic event from your past. You have to go very slowly, relax through it. You allow the feelings to come up while you're including the sense of pleasure. Remember, you're creating a pleasurable sense if you stroke your hands and arms. As that memory is recalled, the memory gets reconsolidated with some of the experiences happening in the present moment. So you're being deeply relaxed, you're yawning, you're stretching, you're stroking your hands and arms, and that embeds that awful, terrible memory with a little bit of pleasure. Mm-hmm. The next time you recall that memory, it may have very little emotional effect upon you. So we're currently exploring and experimenting bringing these types of neurowisdom exercises into working with combat veterans who have PTSD. So you don't just recall, you just don't want to recall a positive memory from the past. You want to prepare yourself. You want to be in the most relaxed, positive state so that you can watch and observe that old memory from a pleasant state.
So when you stroke your arms and hands, what changes take place in the brain?
Well, it's very interesting that when you stroke, you know, when you stroke your palms of your hands and your forearms, you're stimulating areas in your parietal lobe, which is kind of right above your ears. This is where your sense of self is. So what we believe is happening is that you're building a pleasurable sense of self. Understand that when you've gone through an abuse or a trauma, somebody's yelled and screamed at you too many times as a kid, or has really violated your boundaries, oftentimes this shatters your own self-confidence and your own image of yourself. Many children think, what did they do wrong? Why were they, you know, they were bad because somebody else did something terrible to them. So they end up growing up with parts of their parietal lobe that just don't get stimulated fully enough. And so we're finding out through brain scan studies that this is one of the ways that you can help build more confidence and more self-trust and rebuild the damage by learning how to basically be kind and compassionate and loving towards yourself.
So one of the things that sort of puzzle me, often, you know, we hear that deep breathing helps you to relax. And I thought I read somewhere that you said deep breathing increases stress. I'm just curious
Correct.
About that.
Deep breathing increases metabolic energy. You can all try that right now. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to breathe in as deeply as you can. Do it again, and breathe really deeply again, and again, And again, what are you feeling happy? You start feeling buzzy and tinglingness. Now, we have a new book coming out called How Enlightenment Changes Your Brain. What we've found is that in most contemplative meditations, where you're simply focusing on the word peace, or watching your breathing, or observing your thoughts, or doing a simple prayer where you're focusing on a sacred passage that you love, there are these other more vigorous rituals that are done, like in Sufi chanting, for example, or even Pentecostal speaking in tongues, where you're kind of dancing, you're increasing your breathing, and then you're adding a ritual movement. You're like rocking your head back and forth and side to side, and you start repeating a word like ha, 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 as you rock and move and da, whatever. And then what happens after about anywhere from 5 minutes to 50 minutes, you alter your brain chemistry so dramatically that many times frontal lobe activity and your language centers will shut down, and your parietal lobe will shut down as well. You actually lose your sense of self. You can call that surrendering to the experience. But you're in an altered state that's sometimes as powerful as a psychedelic drug experience. And we find that when people do this type of meditation, they can stimulate enormous changes in their whole belief system. So again, what we do with our, in the book, How Enlightenment Changes Your Brain, you know, you can read all about these new strategies on how to reach enlightenment, how to create sudden bursts of insight, where you suddenly see yourself and the world very differently. And then we will guide you through some of these experiences to do that. But we always want you to go back to these neurowisdom exercises as a warm-up exercise so that you remain emotionally grounded. Because when you have a brief moment of enlightenment and insight, all of your old belief systems can fall away. And that can be kind of shocking. You see the world in a new way, and then you come back to everyday reality, and it's like now you're a little bit in conflict. Oh, I thought this was true, and now I see it being otherwise. So enlightenment experiences changes your entire orientation. And we find that you have to integrate these very gentle forms of meditations and relaxation exercises at the same time.
So what are some of the fastest ways to relax if deep breathing is not sort of not helpful?
Well, again, is relaxation mental relaxation or physical relaxation? If it's mental relaxation, we have to ask ourselves, what is mental stress? Mental stress happens when you're worried about something. You actually see increased activity throughout core parts of your frontal lobe and other parts of your brain. Then we look at the research on yawning, in which there were about 50 different studies, and we see that yawning makes the activity drop in your frontal lobe. It's turning off your thought processes. So again, let me ask you and everyone, let's do something different this time. I want you to do three yawns. But I want you to simply do it mindfully, which means after each yawn, notice how it changes your thinking and notice how it affects your mood. So let's begin with that first yawn. I'll guide you through this and you tell me. Do one slow, mindful yawn. Now just take a moment and notice how your awareness changed, how your thoughts changed, how your mood changed. And now do another mindful yawn. Everyone. And the more you yawn, the more you'll find you want to yawn some more. If that's proof that you've been kind of stressed out. So don't be surprised if some of you will be yawning for the next 20 minutes. That's what your brain needs to do. Let's do one more mindful yawn, okay? And when you finish the yawn, sit silently for a moment and just turn your attention onto your mental awareness and your mood. And Quinn, describe to me what you notice.
pretty calm. I feel like ready to sleep. Very calm.
Do you feel more
Relaxed.
fuzzy or do you feel more alert?
More
Do you
fuzzy.
feel heavy or light? Has this been a long
Light.
day for you?
Yes.
Okay, now
This is the only view I'm allowed to yawn.
well, that's why I really want you now to yawn 4 or 5 times more because yawning actually wakes up your brain, and I want you to feel that right now. So yawn, and as you yawn, what I want you to do, I want you to roll your head in a circle so slowly that it takes a full 60 seconds. Keep yawning. Roll your head real slowly. And again, just sit still for a moment and describe to me how your awareness has changed again.
More alert, less tense.
And to get rid of physical tension, I want everyone to be aware that the slower you move anything, like if you just slowly lift your shoulders up towards your ear, but take a full 20 seconds to do so, you'll feel far more aches and pains than you normally feel. And that's what allows your brain to send a relaxation signal to the muscle. Then very slowly let your shoulders go back down. This is awareness through movement. Now, if you were to roll your head 20 minutes from now or lift your shoulders, you'll feel far less pain because your brain's already going to work to make sure that those muscles stay more relaxed. And that too will make you feel more alert because any form of physical tension is stressful.
So when you are in social settings, and say in a group setting or where yawning would be considered rude, what can we do to help with the alertness?
Well, one of the things you can tell the group is saying, "Hey, I just read or heard from this crazy neuroscience researcher that if we all yawn together, our brains will actually begin to align with each other and we'll have greater empathy towards each other." And yes, there are many board executive board meetings going on right now of former students where they begin each board meeting with a communal yawning experience. That's the other thing that yawning does. It seems to turn on the empathy centers in the brain. And why?
That's true, because when you see someone yawn, you yawn,
Correct.
right?
So the only reason why it was considered rude was all the way back in the, back in the 1400s, it was impolite if you didn't belch when you ate. Okay. And everybody would yawn, whatever else. It was just a sign that you were enjoying yourself. But the Black Plague was going on at that time. And so there were two themes. One was that if you yawned and opened your mouth that wide, the devil could get into you. And the other one was maybe you might breathe in a disease. So that's where that rudeness came from. But what we suggest for social engagement is before you go into a social meeting, what if you stood outside of the door and took 60 seconds to yawn and stretch, and then think about the deepest value that you want to bring in and emanate in that social environment? This is called social mindfulness. And then instead of walking into the room the way you normally do, walk a little bit slower. That just helps you to bring more awareness to your walking. People will notice you more. And because you're very relaxed from the yawning and the stretching, and you're really having a wonderful sense of peacefulness from whatever your inner value word is, those will be expressed in your face and in the tone of your voice. So when other people see this face and this tone of voice, their brain becomes more neurologically trusting of you. Let's go back to that other exercise where you recall a pleasant moment. Think about somebody you deeply love and notice how a slight Mona Lisa smile begins to occur on your face. That's the smile that we've been able to research in a brain laboratory, that when you see that smile, people are the most willing to trust you.
Yes.
There aren't too many political candidates who use that smile.
So what is the 10-10 rule?
Well, the 10-10 rule is a training game. It's actually the 10-10 game and the 20-second rule. We know in public communication, when you're talking to somebody else, that most people speak too long, too fast, and nobody can really remember what you say because the brain and consciousness can only hold on to about 4 to 7 words. And remember that. So if you really have something important to say, if you speak, most people speak for 2.5 minutes. That's like 300 words. That means the other person's only going to remember 1/10 of what you said. And just ask your spouse. It's always the wrong 1/10. And we use this in conflict resolution as well. We take two people who hate each other. We ask them, what is your deepest, innermost value? And we say, you can only speak one brief sentence. And then we're going to go round table, and the mediator or the attorney can force a mutual agreement in about 10 minutes that normally takes 2 hours. So that's the 10-10 game. And the 20-second rule is, well, okay, sometimes you need more than 10 words. So speak for about 20 seconds. That's about 1 to 3 sentences. Then pause. Listen deeply. That's social mindfulness. And so we use these exercises to teach a person how to listen more deeply, how to watch their facial expressions more closely. These are exercises and strategies that are well described in our last book, Words Can Change Your Brain. And you can use these techniques to become a better communicator, and it helps to develop the social brain, that insula and anterior cingulate that I mentioned earlier. So you end up being more capable of expressing empathy and kindness and forgiveness and compassion towards others.
Earlier you talked about daydreaming, kind of letting your mind wander. How is that in conflict with mindfulness and being present? And what are the benefits of daydreaming?
Daydreaming is the most overlooked and undervalued mechanism that is absolutely central for the functioning of a healthy brain. We discovered it, as many people did by accident, doing brain scans of meditators, because you have to do a before and after brain scan. You have to not do something and then do an activity. But in meditation, if the meditation is just to sit there and be aware of your thoughts and feelings, what's the non-activity? So we just tell people, well, just lie there and do nothing, just rest. And so it's called a resting state scan. So you would think that if you're busy thinking about all kinds of things and moving objects around on the table or dancing, you would think that your brain is really active. And then when you just sit back and close your eyes and do nothing at all, you would think that your brain is really quiet. But the opposite is true. The brain is more active when it's in this resting state. And what happens is that's where you see all of the imagination and creativity powers going on. So when we told our kids in school, stop looking out of the window, stay focused, we didn't recognize that you can only stay focused on something for maybe 2, 3, 4 minutes at a time, and then your mind has to wander. Then what we're adding to that, not instead of just lying back and daydreaming, we're asking you to mindfully observe the mind-wandering process. We're asking you to mindfully observe how you daydream. So you watch how these thoughts and feelings just pop up and then slide away and break down and whatever else. When that's all done, then if there is a problem that you've been struggling with, then mindfully we ask you to simply ask your intuition for a possible insight or solution to that. And many times you'll get a discovery and you can go forth and do better work.
Is that similar to visualization?
It's part of it. Visualization is something that goes on all the time, whether you're aware of it or not. Now, some of the newest researchers, and this is thanks to a woman named Gabrielle Ottingen, she discovered that it's incredibly important. If you want to achieve any goal, you have to do a four-step visualization process. Step number one, visualize what you desire. Imagine what that goal is, and then visualize what it's like to attain that goal. And so that's kind of easy and fun to do. I mean, that's what vision boards were about, for example. Well, it turns out that those two steps actually turn off the motivational centers of your brain.
Oh,
sure.
Really?
Try it right now. I want you to visualize that I have just given you $10 billion. Imagine yourself lying on top of all of the money you've ever needed. Tell me right now, how motivated do you feel like getting up and going to do some hard work?
See, for me, that would motivate
How did
me
it motivate you?
to get, well, because to realize that I'm not there. And so if for me to get
No,
there,
no,
well,
no.
I'm not talking about
I didn't ask you to
money.
realize that you're not there. I asked you to visualize that you are there.
Okay, that's true.
You weren't doing your
That's true.
visualization fully enough. So go back and visualize that you are there. You are rich and you have everything you've ever wanted. You have the friends that you love. You have the You know, you have the house that you want. You have everything that you've ever wanted. Do you feel like getting out and really chopping down 14 trees right now in your backyard? Or are you going to hire somebody to do it?
Right. So then what can motivate people?
I'm just saying that's what turns off the motivation center. But if it gives you a lot of pleasure, you know that that's important to you. So if you visualize something that you want and you don't feel much of a buzz, forget it. It isn't what you really want. So the next step is visualize you having it all, and then visualize the obstacles that stand between you and reaching that goal.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And some people say, oh, no, I don't want to visualize that. I'm going to manifest it. No, you don't manifest your reality in that particular way at all. Everybody, if that was the case, we'd be in a real mess because everybody's thinking negatively right now throughout the world.
So can you repeat that step? So visualize the
Yes, it's
obstacles.
Called WHOOP process. So the W is visualize your wish or your desire, visualize the outcome. Then the second O is visualize the obstacle, and then visualize a plan on how to get past that obstacle and write that down. If you can't figure out a way of getting past that obstacle, you need to pick a new goal. And a lot of billionaires really have this problem. They get bored and depressed because they've done everything. They don't know what to do. And that's where we bring in, again, other forms of your brain that can imagine bigger and bigger things. So we ask people to think about, if you were the wealthiest person in the world, what could you do with your money? How many people could you help? How would you like to help them? When you focus in on that type of question, that's how you can discover what your deepest purpose and meaning in life is about. So I suggest to everyone listening, take a moment and imagine that you are the richest person in the world and that you must get rid of half of that wealth, which is what Warren Buffett and Bill Gates are asking billionaires to do. How could you best spend your time and your money to do something in the world that makes this whole place a better place? It turns out that the human brain is designed to become as wealthy as possible, and yet that's just greediness and pleasure. When you find out how you can then use that wealth to make the world a better place and help other people, that's what the research shows creates the deepest sense of lifelong satisfaction. And that is NeuroWisdom in a nutshell.
So earlier you talk about the crab board. So when we're actually writing down, all the negative things, negative thoughts, how does that help our brain? Because people often, I don't want to focus on the negative. I try my best to suppress those.
When you put your negative thoughts down on a piece of paper, your brain looks at it and says, "Oh, that's where all my negative thoughts are. I don't have to worry about that anymore." It's like having a second hard drive. And so it's a very funny disassociation process. Now understand that most negative thoughts are just fantasies and memories about things that may go wrong in the future. They're not real. By putting them on your paper and then yawning and stretching and relaxing and just gazing at that list, the impact of those negative thoughts begin to fade away, and you'll see that they're just there. Same thing happens if you wake up in the middle of the night and you have something worrying you. If you write it down on a piece of paper, you'll find you can go back to sleep because your brain knows that it can look at that paper in the morning. Worry never does any good. But if you can state the problem on a piece of paper and then look at it and do a little pleasurable daydreaming, you can then write down three or four ideas, solutions, ways to overcome that problem. And again, these are all the different kinds of exercises and strategies described in Neuro Wisdom 101.
Yes. So my last question to you. You talked about, to foster our self-esteem. You talk about writing down accomplishments of the day and making a gratitude journal. So I'm wondering the same thing. So when we write down those positive things, what does it do to the brain?
This is what the research shows. When you write down the negative things and you mindfully relax and gaze at your list, the negative things become less positive, less powerful, okay? But at the end of the day, if you simply write down three things you did well or three things you feel grateful for, if you do that for 7 days in a row, your self-esteem continues to grow over the next 3 months. So what we're doing with NeuroWisdom 101 and our brain training programs and what we emphasize in all of the books that we write is that you can learn how to increase that positivity ratio where you're bringing more and more consciousness into your positive achievements, the things that you like about yourself, and you're de-emphasizing the negative worries and doubts that we have. Worries and doubts and fears, they kind of go on in your right prefrontal cortex. Positive thoughts and feelings and achievements go on in your left prefrontal cortex. But guess what? They don't both light up at the same time. So when you're focused on negativity, your feelings of positivity go down. When you focus on your accomplishments, you turn off the worry centers in your brain. Yes, it's that simple. And that's one of those mind-blowing discoveries about the human brain.
So, Neuro Wisdom 101 is a course.
Yes, correct. That's 58 audio lessons.
And then, How Enlightenment Can Change Your Brain is a book.
Yes, that's our new book.
And so, how do they get the Neuro Wisdom 101 course?
You can do it in two ways. You can go to my website, which is markrobertswaldman.com. And when you're there, by all means, get the free ebook that's up there in the corner, 10 Mind-Blowing Discoveries About the Human Brain. You'll love it. It's got full color pictures and it's got some really wonderful discoveries that Andy Newberg and I have made over the years. Or you can go directly to the website called neurowisdom.com.
Thank you so much, Mark. That was very informative, very insightful, and really powerful.
Everything is in that power of that first single yawn that helps to reset.
Now I can feel free to yawn. I often complain about my husband yawning when we talk. Now he
Yes,
can say,
well,
yeah, Mark said it's good to yawn.
yes, he's either staying more alert, Because he's too tired to listen to you, or you are boring him. You have to figure out which one that
Yeah, I had to ask him that. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
And that was Mark Wallman. Go to his website, markrobertwallman.com. And Wallman is spelled Waldman. Or his other website, neurowisdom101.com. Thank you for joining me tonight. This is Quinn's Empowerment Hour, hosted by Quinn Leigh Erickson, every other Saturday, 9 p.m. Pacific Time. For more information about Quinn, visit www.quinle.com. Thank you so much for tuning in, and you have a beautiful, restful sleep. Good night.